It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have 3 square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and wishing you all a Merry Christmas. It is a countdown now. Christmas is next Wednesday. It is hard to believe. But welcome to the show. We are going to have some very important conversations today. We've got to talk about this impeachment, obviously. Spending in Washington, D.C. Want to talk a little bit more about this parental leave. I need to talk some more about Charles Schwab. We kind of beat up on that a little bit, and we want to make sure that all of you know that everyday hardworking employees of Charles Schwab, we appreciate you, and we're not talking about you. We're talking about PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties trying to pick winners and losers. And so that's generally what we have planned today. In the third and fourth segment, Joseph Pierce, who is with the Imaginative Conservative. He is an author. He has written books, The Quest for Shakespeare, Tolkien, Man and Myth, The Unmasking of Oscar Wilde, C.S. Lewis and the Catholic Church, Wisdom and Innocence, A Life of G.K. Chesterton. We're going to talk about G.K. Chesterton. I don't know a whole lot about him, but he is certainly held up as a very important figure regarding thinking about big ideas, I would say. And he lived near the beginning of the century, I think it is. And so anyway, we're going to be talking with Joseph Pierce about G.K. Chesterton. I think that's going to be really interesting, Steve.
Looking forward to that, yes. And what's the one thing that we can't keep from talking about? What do we want to open with?
You mean impeachment?
Yeah, it's a four-letter word.
Okay, we'll get to that in just a minute. Steve has some sound bites that we want to play. Before we do that, though, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And socialism ultimately comes down to force. And when President Trump looks into the camera and says, they're not coming after me, they're coming after you, I just am standing in the way. We are seeing the veil is off on this. You know, we used to think it was a tin foil hat kind of stuff on this deep state. The veil is off on that. And, and particularly yesterday, with the impeachment. And so we'll be talking about that in just a moment. Before we go to that, though, I want to say thank you to the teams, Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for your good work. Thank you to you listeners out there. You have a purpose. Strive for excellence today. Take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. The quote for today is from G.K. Chesterton, English writer and philosopher who lived at the turn of the 20th century. He said, to have a right to do a thing is not at all the same as to be right in doing it. Again, to have a right to do a thing is not at all the same as to be right in doing it. Steve, I mean, in a way, that almost plays into this whole impeachment thing today.
Well, every quote you find has such great relevance to some of the, to borrow a word from Joe Biden, to all the malarkey that's out there today.
Yes, there is a lot of malarkey. So our funnies for the day. Are you ready for this, Steve?
Always.
The two U.S. cities with the highest alcohol consumption are Las Vegas and Washington, D.C. The difference between the two is that in Washington, the drunks are gambling with our money. And there you have it. Okay, and just some of our housekeeping things. Want to make, give a shout out to Hooters, one of our valued partners. They can help out with your holiday party. Their wings spice up any holiday party. I've actually got friends coming over on Sunday night, and we're going to have their spicy buffalo shrimp, which is going to be great. You can place your catering order now. They'll help out. They have a variety of party platters. And be sure and check out my website. They have a landing page there. And include Hooters in your holiday parties. You'll be glad that you did. Secondly, our Stand for Colorado rally will be on January 8th. So next week is Christmas, the next week is New Year's, and the next week is the first day of the legislative session, January 8th. We want these legislators and the governor to know that we are watching and that we care. And so it's 11 o'clock. It's a Wednesday on the west steps of the Capitol. So plan to take a long lunch, maybe take the day off. But every day, you know, we need to do something as citizens to show that we care. And I know that it takes an effort to get downtown to the Capitol to do this, but be there or be square on January 8th. We've got an amazing list of speakers. We'll have that on the website probably by the end of today. And we would really like for you to join us on that. And Steve, I think you said you're going to try to be there.
Yes, because several different reasons. The visual of these people standing on the Capitol steps on that particular day and the message that's going to be brought by all these great women speakers, I got to be there.
We have 16 women of the West. We'll be talking about issues that matter to all of us, and so you don't want to miss that. Wait, Steve, I'm having quite a time with the pipes this morning. Sorry about that. And then another thing, we are going to open our salon series, which is on Monday, January 13th at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial. Helen Raleigh, who immigrated from China, she lived under communism. She knows what happens to everyday people there, and she is a legal citizen of the United States and has a deep love of the American idea and of capitalism. And she and Dr. Paul Prentiss will be presenting the Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. And we will have that on the website shortly as well, where you can sign up on that. It will be $20 at the door, and then you can order whatever you want to eat or drink. You just pay for that as well. It's going to be a really great event, so be sure and join us. Okay, Steve, let's jump in here. Yesterday, the House of Representatives voted to impeach our president, and I think there's headline that I had seen on you get on the internet. It said that President Trump, they voted for impeachment, and this is an indelible mark on his presidency. I thought that's exactly what they want to do, because there is no basis for this impeachment, but they want to create this this mark on his presidency so that people that are just, you know, they're busy, they're just not really paying a lot of attention, they're going, oh my gosh, impeached, he must have done something really, really bad. And let's go ahead and go with those sound bites that you have collected for us, Steve.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
Okay, that's the ever-popular Representative Al Green from Texas. And every time I hear that, I think, and I'm begging people to listen to what he's actually saying. In other words, it's my job, our job, you know, to who he's speaking to usurp the American people.
The election, exactly. Yes. The voice of the American people.
Yeah.
And they're concerned that the American people may speak and that they may, in fact, vote President Trump in again, because they like the fact that the economy is doing well. They like the fact that taxes have been lowered, that regulations have been lowered. So he is concerned that because of that, that President Trump might be reelected. So they're going to usurp the vote of the American people. Okay, next soundbite.
Let's not forget this gem from the bad AOC.
We also need to move quite quickly, because we're talking about the potential compromise of the 2020 elections. And so this is not just about something that has occurred. This is about preventing a potentially disastrous outcome from occurring next year.
And what would that disastrous outcome be?
That's my question to you and to anybody listening. What is she referring to there? Let's read between the lines.
That President Trump might be reelected. Okay, and then this last one that you have, Steve.
This one is from let me get it open here. This is from our friend Bob Duco from another Crawford station. We hear him every day on KLZ and KLTT. I caught this one on the way home last night from a social event, and it's not the entire thing. It's only 15 seconds, but this captures the essence of what we think our job is here. Listen to this.
So it's really going to boil down to how much will the American public educate themselves to what the Democrats have truly done with this impeachment sham. If they educate themselves well, then 2020 in November is going to go very well for President Trump.
I love that because that's the essence. Like, and you've already basically said the same, this in a way, the same thing earlier. People only catching little sound bites. Oh my gosh, he has an impeachment now that's been levied against him. He must have done something bad. If you go out there and learn what has really happened in the last 6 months, or even go back to further, go back to the evening of the last general election in 2016, they set themselves on this mission because they knew.
To overturn the vote of the American people. Now, apparently, Nancy Pelosi has said that she may slow it down to send it over to the Senate. Because what, in essence, is happening, the House levels these charges. And once again, it was not fair. There was not due process. They did not have an equal number of people that testified from both sides of the, of the aisle, if you will. The Democrats had more people that came in, and we had Rob Nadelson on earlier this week, and he said that two of the three professors that the Democrats called have never written anything on impeachment, and so they don't have the credentials, but they trotted them out to make these allegations against President Trump. This is whether or not you are where you fall politically. It doesn't really matter. Because if, in fact, over here, we can accuse someone without due process and not give them a free and fair, the trial will actually be in the Senate, but free and fair response to the allegations, then that is pretty scary for any American, because due process is something that is inherent within the American idea. So now it's supposed to go over to the Senate, where there will actually be, that's the trial. And the senators can't grandstand like those in the House of Representatives. They have to sit there like jurors and see the evidence that is presented. And then they will make a decision on that. And because the Republicans hold the Senate, the chances are, I think the Democrats would have to turn at least three senators. Of course, there's a few that probably would do that, Republicans. But there may be some Democrats that may not vote for impeachment. But it would be the opportunity for the American people to see the allegations leveled against President Trump and him able to make a defense of those things. And then I think you'd start to see Hunter Biden, Joe Biden. We'd start to see what they had done over in Ukraine. I've heard that there are a number of senators who, families, members, and this is both sides of the aisle, are involved in Ukraine. And so there may be many people that want to slow that down and not have that happen. The Democrats just want this to percolate out there on the headlines, Trump impeached, Trump impeached, Trump impeached. And so we as American people need to understand that. And you know what? In America, it's interesting, Steve. In America, anybody can accuse anybody of anything. And you have to lawyer up to protect yourself. And so it's not until you get over with the due process in the trial that we actually will see, see a response to these allegations. Steve, you look like you want to say something.
Well, two thoughts. If Nancy Pelosi, the protocol says that, okay, once you have voted to impeach, you're going to take your articles of impeachment over to the Senate chamber, and you're going to do it in a specific, timely manner. If she starts dragging her heels and slowing down the, or just voiding the protocol while she tries to jury rig the whole process, she does it at her own peril because people are already suspicious. People in her own party are already suspicious. The second thing I noticed yesterday, I watched that charade in the afternoon when each members of the House were allowed to come up to the microphone for a minute and a half to say what they wanted to say. And without a doubt, every one of the Dems came up with something about what a solemn day it was and reminded everybody about their solemn oath to protect and defend the Constitution. Where were they 8 years ago when Barack Obama was using the Constitution as toilet paper?
Yeah, well, people, I guess I would take that as a positive, that they are assuming that everyday American people still care about the Constitution. So I'm going to take that as a cup is half full. I'll take that as a positive. How's okay. that?
All right. I just kind of get disgusted hearing them say that phrase over and over again after what we saw with 8 years of Barack Obama.
Yeah. You know, I think that everyday people out there that are just kind of not totally paying attention, though, I think that they're starting to say, wait a minute, how much money, how much time is being spent on this? We have sent those people back there to represent us. And I don't think that this is going to bode well for the Democrats. One other thing I wanted to mention, apparently Tulsi Gabbard voted present. And I'm like, buck up and actually take a stand. When I was on city council, there was a vote. It was early on in when I was on council, and it was a somewhat, everybody else was going to vote yes. I wanted to vote no, but I was still kind of green on it. And I thought, and the city manager said, Kim, you need to take a stand. You either vote yes or you vote no, but you don't vote present. And I thought that was really good advice, Steve, because present, there's no leadership in just being present. And Tulsi Gabbard, I think, is the only candidate for on the Democrat side for presidency, for the president, that could actually give Donald Trump a run for his money, just because I think she's somewhat reasonable. But they hate her. The Democrats hate her. And the fact, though, that she voted present, I've lost a little bit of respect for her. So your final thought, and we'll go to break.
Well, it comes back to what Bob Duco said. People got to stop and learn what's actually going on here, and here's why. How many years ago was it, in 2008, we heard Barack Obama saying that he wanted to fundamentally change the United States, and everyone said, well, we don't know what that means, but it sure sounds good because we have so many problems. Well, after 8 years of him being in office, we now know what that means.
And what that means is he wanted to fundamentally, forcibly move us from a free nation, a liberty-loving nation, to a more socialistic nation.
And please
nation.
Don't think that if Donald Trump wins a second term, that they're going to go away. After that term is over,
they never give up.
They'll be right back.
They never give
up. If you love this country, then please educate yourself. Get involved to the degree of knowing what's going on so they can't pull the rug out from under you.
And on that point, listen to the show every morning, 6 to 7 a.m. The podcasts are Kim Munson, that's MONSON.com, and show up on January 8th for Stand for Colorado. That website, StandForColorado.com. Let's go to break. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. All of our shows are archived there, as well as you can find the podcasts. And wanted to clarify a little bit. And Steve, you normally bring me back because I care deeply about everyday, hardworking Coloradans, Americans. I think it's so important to protect their rights to go after their life, their liberty, and their pursuit of happiness. And what I see then is PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that they work together and they create special deals and they pick winners and losers. And some guys have to play by the rules. The other guys get breaks on it. And I tell you what, that is something that really, really gets my ire up. And so this piece that Patty had found, we talked about it yesterday in the Denver Business Journal, is where the city of Lone Tree was working with the state of Colorado. Let me get this exactly here. Charles Schwab had purchased their rival TD Ameritrade, and their hope was that the San Francisco-based company would move its headquarters to Lone Tree, but that didn't happen. In May, 6 months prior to that announcement, the Metro Denver Economic Development Corp, Lone Tree, and the Colorado Office of Economic Development, and I just want to back up, all of these economic development corporations, they typically live off of, or there's a good portion of their money that is contributed to them by the different municipalities, or it could be the different agencies, government agencies. So they have a significant amount of their revenue that comes from your money via these municipalities. So we have the Metro Denver Economic Development Corp, Lone Tree, and the Colorado Office of Economic Development and International Trade Officials. They sent the financial services giant a 17-page document titled Charles Schwab Lone Tree Headquarters Invitation. The Denver Business Journal obtained that via public records, and it included a letter we mentioned from Betsy Markey. And remember, she had run for Congress. I can't remember if it was one or two, that she was in office. But she then lost her election. But she's now the executive director of the Office of Economic Development. And so she certainly is probably making a very healthy salary doing that. And now then she is being paid to invite Charles Schwab to apply for a Colorado Job Growth Incentive Tax Credits. They said, we support the efforts of the City of Lone Tree in encouraging your continued growth in Colorado and hope you will consider additional investment in your campus. And they offered them $20 to $25 million. Now, Charles Schwab said no. And I was talking with Patty yesterday afternoon, and she said, Kim, one of the important things we need to remember is that Charles Schwab did not go to the state of Colorado. They did not go to Lone Tree. That these PBIs actually went to them with $20 to $25 million of tax credits on the table. There's something wrong with that picture, Steve. I find it just really hard to believe that we are to the point now in the guise of economic development that we are going to give big corporations, you know, that much money in tax breaks, but yet the little guy over here, the restaurant owner, the pizza parlor, they have to pay not only their taxes on their property, you know, where they have their building, or, you know, the rent goes towards those property taxes, but they have to pay something called a business personal property tax. They have to pay taxes on their ovens, on their chairs, on their tables. So here you got little guy over here paying full fare, big breaks being offered over here to big corporations, and then PBI say, well, the reason that we're doing that is if we bring in these people that'll be working here, they're going to go over and they're going to eat pizza at this pizza joint. That's not government's responsibility to do that. How about we lower taxes, rules, and regulations across the spectrum and let everybody compete on an even playing field? Steve, your thoughts?
Well, back in six weeks ago now or so, we had the election, and what was the thing we were voting on?
Proposition CC.
Yeah, Proposition CC.
Which was the question to take away our Tabor tax refunds forever.
We did, collectively, Patty, you and I, and we did a great job. We started tracking to the degree that these freebies and incentives were being given away. And we were up in the billions from what, 2012 or 2014, mm-hmm. when we first started tracking this. At the same time, we were asking the question, then, why is this same government asking for more money from the taxpayers, as, you know, CC was going to go at the heart of Tabor the way it was? And it's like, these two things are oil and water, or they're diametrically opposed. Let's figure this out.
Well, and you know, one of the things that I hear from PBIs is that people want more and more services, and so therefore we need to have more and more tax revenue so that we can give more and more services. And so instead of being in the business of protecting people's rights of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, being able to build their businesses and go after their hopes and dreams, many PBIs think that they're in the business to try to put together a situation where businesses can create more tax revenue so then that the municipality or the county or the state will get more tax revenue. And that certainly is not really the proper role of government. But we have John Buckingham on the line with Presidential Wealth Management. And John Buckingham, what's on your mind? Do you have any comments on this even playing field that I've been talking about?
Well, I think, you know, just to start on the whole corporate tax, if you want true competition, if you want to eliminate where the taxation goes or control where the taxation goes, just eliminate the corporate tax completely, because, you know, corporations are just pieces of paper. Eventually, someone pays the taxes on that. It's either going to be the owners, the shareholders, the board of directors and executives, it's going to be the employees, or it's going to be the consumer. So if you want to control where who gets that tax passed on to them, then eliminate it and just tax everybody at the same rate, whether it's cap gains or earned income or dividend income. And then those who actually get the money pay the taxes, and they get to decide where they spend their money after that.
Well, that sounds like a very fine idea, instead of government trying to control that. And what, and they do. Government tries to control all those different things. And it, you know, you mentioned something, John, and corporations get a bad rap. We've heard, you know, some of the House of Representatives, the congresswomen there say, oh, we have all these corporations that don't pay any income tax. But that's not quite true. If they're profitable, don't they many times either reinvest that in their company, reinvest that in their people, or they pay that out to the shareholders who pay taxes on it then, right? Am I correct?
That's correct. And that's the whole thing, is when you treat a corporation like an entity rather than a collection of individuals, which it is, either via, you know, if you're just looking at the employee base or if you're looking at the shareholder base, it's just individuals. And sooner or later, someone pays the taxes on that money. And yes, a business is designed to try and minimize taxation, like every individual is going to try and minimize their taxation. They're not going to want to overpay. You know, if you want to get rid of everything and just kind of clean it up, get rid of the 80,000 page tax code and make it simple, make it very clear and clean. And then you know where the money is going, you know who's getting taxed, and you don't have all these arguments and these freebies being handed out via either loopholes, deductions, or subsidies, or, you know, giving incentives to companies to move to a certain location. You eliminate all of that nonsense.
Bingo, John Buckingham. And of course, I would like to say that instead of what's going on in Washington, D.C., with all this focus on impeachment, all the money, all the time and energy that's headed towards that, I would love it if they would simplify the tax code. Wouldn't that be a good thing if they went to Washington and did their job? Ha, what do you think?
That would just be shocking if that actually ever happened. So
yeah, this is true. So, hey, I've got another question for you, John Buckingham, Presidential Wealth Management. I'm going to give the phone number 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Natalie will be at the boards at 7:30, but I'm going to be talking with Joseph Pierce, who's originally from Britain. And well, we're calling it Thinking Thursday. We'll chat about G.K. Chesterton, who lived at the turn of the 20th century, and he was just really a prolific thinker. But Joseph is also from Britain, and I'm going to ask him about Boris Johnson and Brexit. What's your thoughts on what's happened with Boris Johnson's election?
Well, I think it kind of highlighted a couple things. One, you know, the voters voted to exit the EU. So, and then all of a sudden the politicians decided they weren't going to listen to the voters. So one, you had an overwhelming support for the Brexit in how the election went. I think part of it too, in terms of Johnson's kind of massive victory here, is that people, the working class, they're done with identity politics. They're tired of hearing all the victimization speeches and being told that they're wrong and that they need to, you know, make up for what past generations have done. And I think they're really telling the politicians and the leadership that, yeah, you may have a very vocal, young progressive left movement that is out there and in your face, but that's not the direction people want to go. And I think that's where, you know, the election kind of said that pretty loud and clear. And now they've got a big enough majority that they can get done what needs to be done for their economy, and that's get out of the EU.
Well, and I think the Democrats here on this side of the pond, maybe should watch what's going on, but it seems like they can't. They have, you know, this focus on impeachment. They don't want to listen to the people. I think that's one of the things on this whole impeachment vote is they want to overturn the vote of the American people of 2016, and they want to impeach because they don't actually want to compete in the free market of ideas in this next election, because as Steve had played those sound bites, they're concerned that Donald Trump might be reelected. So it's fascinating what's going on, John Buckingham.
I agree. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, when you look at where they're going, they know they don't have anyone right now that can beat him. And this is their way to try and get somebody else as a Republican to be the runner by trying to get rid of Trump out of office. You know, but you look at the Senate, there's no way he's going to get convicted. It's just not possible based on the nonsense they put forth in the impeachment. So, yeah, they're not learning their lesson. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm glad, because that means they're likely to get knocked out of the leadership of the House. Right. You know, so they're going to face the same thing that the UK Labor Party did.
Yeah, I find it really fascinating. So, and John Buckingham, one other thing before we go to Joseph Pierce, and we wanted to talk quickly about IRAs. We're coming in on the end of the year. What do people need to know before the end of the year on any of this?
Well, for anyone, you know, on the IRA side, you know, if your RMDs aren't done, if you have a required distribution to take, obviously you've got a couple weeks left to get that taken care of. You definitely want to do that to avoid a 50% tax penalty. You know, there's changes coming down the pipe, but that's not going to affect anyone this year. But I think that, you know, just make sure that your required distributions are done. If you're looking to convert anything to a Roth IRA, you've got a couple weeks left to get that taken care of as well.
Okay, great. So be sure and check out Presidential Wealth Management, John Buckingham, Jason McBride, the whole team over there. They can help you out. And our landing page together is airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com. John Buckingham, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Yeah, sounds great. See you then.
Okay, thanks. We're going to go to break, and then Joseph Pierce is on the line. We'll talk with him about G.K. Chesterton, and I also want to ask him, he did a piece in the Imaginative Conservative on Brexit or Leave It. And so let's go to break. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Do you know we have homeless veterans in our area? That's why KLZ, with your help, is having a donation drive. The Axe Resource Center is requesting cleaning and toiletry items that can be found in the kitchen, bathroom, and laundry room. Drop-off locations are in Wheat Ridge, Fort Collins, and Colorado Springs. To help with this veterans donation drive and more information, visit our website, klzradio.com.
Pretty paper, pretty ribbon. Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. I'm thrilled to have a conversation with Joseph Pierce. He is the director of book publishing at the Augustine Institute. He is the editor of the St. Austin Review and senior contributor at the Imaginative Conservative. He has authored many books, including The Quest for Shakespeare, Tolkien, Man or Myth, The Unmasking of Oscar Wilde, C.S. Lewis and the Catholic Church, and Wisdom and Innocence, A Life of G.K. Chesterton. I'm just so excited to talk with him. He was referred to me by our good friend Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. Joseph Pierce, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's good to be on.
I've always heard G.K. Chesterton, we're calling this Thinking Thursday, and I've always heard him quoted, and I've been intrigued by him. I don't know that much about him. You had written a piece that was published October 2nd of this year at the Imaginative Conservative, and you titled it The Wonder of G.K. Chesterton. So introduce our listeners to G.K. Chesterton.
Yes, indeed. And of course, to talk about the wonder of Chesterton is very appropriate for this season of wonder that we're approaching of Christmas. So Chesterton, very briefly, was an English writer who was active from the turn of the last century. He was first published in 1900 and he died in 1936. So for the first third of the 20th century, he wrote all sorts of books. But the key thing about him, I think, is this sense of wonder and gratitude about the cosmos that allows us to take on these materialistic ideas that are so prevalent in the 20th century. He engaged many of the bad philosophies of his day, and he did it with a sense of Christian wonder and a real grasp of Christian philosophy. So I know that. Personally, as a convert to Christianity, I owe a great debt of gratitude to Chesterton for showing me that faith and reason are actually indissolubly married and are not at war with each other.
Huh, because a lot of people, they have a difficult time matching up faith and reason.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. I think it's part of the problem of the culture we're living in is that people think you have to choose. You know, you either have to be a Christian and therefore embrace being irrational, or you have to be rational, in which case you have to give up your religious faith. When in actual fact, the Christian philosophy follows in the footsteps of the great Greek philosophers, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, and the great Christian philosophers, St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas. And Chesterton was fully in that tradition. And those philosophers insisted, first of all, that reason led us to faith, that reason leads us to a belief in the existence of God, and that no other understanding of the cosmos makes sense in rational terms, except ultimately that this is a created cosmos in which we live.
Okay, this you triggered me, Joseph. This made me think of something that a couple of years ago, somebody gave me a Christmas cactus, and these are little plants that typically will bloom just at Christmas. And I was looking at that this morning. I'm thinking, how on earth could we ever think that all this just happened by happenstance, that there is a plant that actually will just bloom every Christmas, that it came out of some nothing. And if you can't get nothing out of nothing. And so there is faith and reason together. Address that. I'm not sure that makes sense, but it was making sense to me this morning early.
Well, I mean, what you just said makes sense of the whole thing is that to be an atheist, you have to believe that there's nothing, and yet, although there's nothing, something exists. Now, how does something exist from nothing? The answer is it can't. You know, that something has to be in being, and what that forces us to ask fundamental questions about what being is. And ultimately, we go back to the primal being who is God, from which all other being springs. That is a logical, as well as being a philosophical and theological way of seeing reality. The only alternative is to believe somehow that although nothing exists, we have something anyway, which is just logical nonsense as well as being philosophical nonsense.
Okay, I have a question for you though, and that is, if we're talking about the Christian faith, and then many times we have evolution that's matched up with the Christian faith, and it's like, well, how did the dinosaurs live so many millions years ago? How do you answer people when they ask that question, Joseph Pierce?
Well, there's two things. First of all, is that the book of Genesis is it shows us how the world came into being. Obviously, the 6 days of creation are not meant to be taken literally in terms of it being 24 hours, because days, as the 24-hour days, are a consequence of where the Earth is in relation to the sun and et cetera, et cetera. And so, before the creation of the sun, there could not be 24-hour days. So clearly, you know, what we're talking about in Genesis is a story that tells us something about the truth. And we need to understand here that stories are the way that we understand the truth. It's the way we make sense of things. So, for instance, the parable of the prodigal son. The prodigal son never existed. He's a figment of Christ's imagination. It's a work of fiction. Prodigal son didn't exist. His father didn't exist. His brother didn't exist. And yet every time that we hear that story, we see ourselves in the story. It shows us something about who we are. Maybe we see ourselves in the brother or the prodigal prodigal son himself, or perhaps the forgiving father, or a bit of all of them. But the point is that that story teaches us priceless and timeless lessons. Same thing with the book of Genesis. It shows us that in the beginning there was only God, and God brings forth light. And then actually the sequence of things in the book of Genesis pretty much follows what science has subsequently discovered as regards the sequence of creation itself, from the void to the creation of the planets, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, let's talk about man then. There are those that say that man evolved from apes. How do you respond to that?
Well, again, great question, but let me just talk about science here. That scientists have been trying to make the evolution of species work in the laboratory. So not by accident, which is the way, of course, atheists believe it happened, but actually trying to make it work. And now for over a century, they've been trying to make fruit flies evolve into something other than fruit flies. They failed to do so. My microbiologist friends, I have friends who are professors of microbiology at a couple of universities, they actually say that it's much more basic than that. Scientists have not even managed to get the most basic primal life forms such as bacteria to actually evolve into a different type of bacteria. So E. coli, for instance, bacteria, they can't make that be anything but E. coli. So in other words, there's absolutely no empirical scientific evidence of one species ever evolving into another species.
Okay, so next question. With what we have going on in the political spectrum across the globe right now regarding, say, climate change, man-made climate change. Every time I look at the weather and they don't get it right the next day, I always have to make a snarky comment and say, how on earth do we think that people can tell us what the temperature is going to be like, or what the temperature will be in 100 years, if we can't get the weather exactly right the next day? And so this whole climate change argument, you know, I think it's more about controlling people. And many of those that have started to worship the climate seem to have a disdain for humankind, that there's too many people on the earth. You saw Prince Harry and Meghan Markle say that they're only going to have 2 children because they don't want to overpopulate the earth. How would you respond to that, Joseph Pierce?
Well, the first thing is you're completely correct that we're talking about a new science, and there's a difference between science, which just comes from the word scientia, which means knowledge, and scientism. And scientism is basically the worship of science. It's a philosophy. It's not a science at all. It's basically a belief that science, the physical sciences, have the answer to all the problems. And the trouble, once we have that false philosophy of scientism, we start treating scientists as gods. And so if you can just say a scientist said it, we're all supposed to bow down and genuflect. When in actual fact, you know, but if you actually look at the history of science, in every century, the vast majority of things that scientists are saying are proven subsequently to be false. So when you see science in the context of history, and that's the problem these days, we're all suffering from amnesia, none of us have any knowledge of history, we see that basically just believing what the current science says is true, especially if it's speculative new science, we should take it with a pinch of salt and with a healthy, truly scientific skepticism.
Okay, so I'm going to circle back. We're going to go to break in just a little bit. But G.K. Chesterton, and I'm talking about human beings, there seems to be kind of this movement among some that don't value humankind, that they say that humankind is the problem to everything. And this goes back to the piece that you've written. You said, for Chesterton, man is a miraculous creature living in a miraculous cosmos. He says, we don't live in the best of all possible worlds, but the best of all impossible worlds. That's pretty heady out there. So explain that to Joseph Pierce.
Yeah, basically that you know, what we're living in the midst of a miracle, and we are ourselves a miracle in the midst of a miracle. Chesterton says, give me miraculous eyes to see my eyes, those terrible crystals made alive in me, more beautiful than all the things they see. In other words, that we have to have the ability to see ourselves with a sense of wonder, see ourselves as some sort of impossible creature in an impossible cosmos, that we've been given the great gift of life. And I'm looking out the window at a forest of bare trees with a few evergreens amidst it, blue sky behind it. You know, we have been given this wonderful, beautiful, miraculous, impossible from the terms of, for the perspective of it being purely an accident. We've been given that as a gift. It's Christmas time is coming up, and I'd like all of us to be able to sort of treat it as a gift, try to give that gift to each other in that sense of wonder, which not only the Christmas season, but our very existence demands.
Well, and as we give that to each other, it's not only to friends and family. We talked about this, I think, I recently talked about this with a friend of mine, and that is, you know, Wilbur Wilberforce, again, British, like you, you know, had been so concerned back in the 1700s with the British slave trade and was instrumental. It took 20 years for him to work to get that stopped. But the other thing is he really thought that there was a lack of good manners and that he wanted to bring back good manners. And I think that that's happened in America as well. And good manners, treating each other, you know, with care and with kindness, I think circles back to just kind of the wonder of each person, that you appreciate the wonder that they are, and one of the ways to show that is good manners. Your thoughts, Joseph?
Well, absolutely, but I would maybe just take that one step further and go back to the roots of where good manners come from, and that's the difference between a Christian understanding of love and a secular understanding of love. So for the secularists, for people that don't believe in any God, that love is a feeling. It's something that you feel, and therefore it's irrational and it's transient and it passes away and there's not much you can do about it. But for a Christian, it's entirely different. For a Christian, love is a rational choice. In other words, love is reason, that we have to freely choose to lay down our lives for the other. Whether that's our spouse, our children, our parents, our neighbors, or indeed our enemies. We have to make that free choice. And, of course, the feeling will change. The feeling we have towards our parents is different from the feeling we have towards our spouse or our enemy, etc. But the thing that makes it love is the freely choosing to sacrifice ourselves for the other, to lay down our lives for the other. And that means giving ourselves to the other person. With that Christian understanding of love, good manners follow. In other words, we have to put responsibilities before rights. Rather than talk about what my rights are, we should be asking what I can do for the other person. And if we had that turnaround from this secular understanding of love to a Christian understanding of love, the world would be changed overnight to a much, much better place.
Fascinating. We're going to go to break, but one other thing before we do that, because I would like to chat with you a little bit about Boris Johnson and what's going on across the pond, since that is where you are originally from. But this list of books that you have written is absolutely fascinating to me. The Quest for Shakespeare, Tolkien, Man and Myth, The Unmasking of Oscar Wilde, C.S. Lewis and the Catholic Church, and Wisdom and Innocence, A Life of G.K. Chesterton, among others. What a fascinating a group of books that you've written, Joseph Pierce.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I keep myself busy. And, of course, these writers have been very influential upon my own journey. So in many ways, this is an act of gratitude on my part, paying back a debt. So, you know, I know the power of these writers, and I want to be able to show that power to other people.
Well, that might be a great Christmas gift, some of these books for people this particular Christmas, if they're still thinking of things to give. So, hey, Joseph Pierce, let's go to break. When we come back, you'd written a piece, again, in The Imaginative Conservative. It was published October 8th of this year, Brexit or Leave It. And, of course, since then, Boris Johnson has had this kind of amazing victory, and want to ask you about that. So this is Kim Munson. It's The Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
We've got that holiday.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thrilled to have on the line with me. We have Thinking Thursday. I hope that your thinking caps are just firing on all cylinders here because Joseph Pierce is with us, the director of book publishing at the Augustine Institute, editor of the St. Austin Review, and senior contributor at the Imaginative Conservative. Brexit. Joseph Pierce, you originally grew up in Britain, and you live in the United States now, correct, Joseph?
Yes, I moved to the States 4 days before 9/11, and I'm now in South Carolina, so I've been here for 18 years.
Okay. Brexit. We've been watching this, and it's been most interesting. And the first line in this op-ed that you've done is, what does the European Union have in common with the Hotel California? Explain that.
Yeah, well, basically, I use that analogy because, of course, in Hotel California by the Eagles, there's the line, you can check out whenever you like, but you can never leave. And that's, you know, obviously the British people have voted repeatedly for Brexit. They vote, first of all, the UK Independence Party won the European election. That was the first vote. And then there was the referendum, and that was the second vote. And then the Brexit Party won the last European election. That was the third vote. And still the Liberals are saying, oh, this is undemocratic. I mean, what planet are they on? And then, of course, the last general election, Boris Johnson standing on a Brexit ticket, wins a landslide victory. So we've now had four referenda demanding that Britain leave the European Union. I do actually believe that the fourth one might be the one that makes it happen.
Well, and this whole Brexit thing really bodes well for sovereignty. You know, we've seen the globalists try to move the world to kind of a one-world global order. And as people are starting to see the effects of that, they're like, wait a minute. And so Brexit is maybe a harbinger of what might happen in the U.S. election this November in 2020.
Well, I certainly hope so. And I actually, you know, I was following the British general election from Budapest in Hungary because I was over there for a conference on the future of Christian democracy in Europe. And, of course, Hungary itself is part of that resistance alongside countries like Poland within the European Union that are demanding their national sovereignty within the Union, where the European Union, of course, is trying to undermine that, the European Union really being a stepping stone towards this globalist world order that the global corporations and big business and big government are working towards. So really, we have this resistance both within the European Union and now, hopefully, with the UK actually showing what can be done, actually leaving the tyranny which is the EU. And I agree with you completely that localism, which in terms of the world it starts with national sovereignty, is what's necessary to stop the world just descending into a globalist tyranny with a world government that will not be democratic in any meaningful sense whatsoever. That has to be avoided at all costs, and nation states are necessary for that to happen.
Okay, and do you think that we're going to see some kind of a Brexit with Germany? Somebody mentioned that to me the other day.
Well, Germany basically, the irony about the European Union, bearing in mind we fought two world wars against German imperialism in the 20th century, World War I and World War II, is in reality, the European Union is actually controlled by Germany. So it's in many ways is a German empire that sort of imposing itself upon the peoples and nations of Europe. So I can't see how Germany could actually leave Brexit leave the European Union without the European Union ceasing to exist. I can't see that happen. I think Germany will be the last nation to leave. But I do see a growth of what is called Euroscepticism, in other words, a resistance to the European Union in many other countries. Italy, certainly most of the countries in Central Europe are resisting the EU's imperialism. France is also now showing an increase, and that would be crucial because the three major powers in Europe, in the European Union, were the UK, France and Germany. So the UK is bailing out. If France also now starts to stand up for its own national sovereignty, then the whole game could be up.
So we may have Frexit, is what you're saying.
A Frexit would be great. I think it's a little way down the line, but it's a possibility.
Okay, and then we have just a couple of minutes. What about Christianity in Europe? I hear that, and I've seen that many of the beautiful churches, nobody goes into them to worship. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it's certainly true that throughout the 20th century there was a secularization of Europe, but I do believe this resistance and growth of an understanding of national sovereignty, nations' histories, is beginning to grow back. I saw that in Budapest. I saw the Christmas markets all over the town, the light display on the Basilica. Now, I believe that what we've seen is the low tide as regards Christianity in Europe, and I think we're actually going to see a return to Christianity in much greater numbers throughout Europe throughout this century.
Oh, Joseph Pierce, this has been so fascinating. This has gone so quickly. Now, how can people get more information, find your pieces, and order your books? Where can they do that?
Well, if they go to my personal website, jpierce.co, all of my latest articles are actually posted on that site.
Okay, and Pierce is spelled P-E-A-R-C-E, right?
Correct. JPEARCE.CO.
Okay. And Joseph, what would be the final thought that you would like to leave with our listeners as we're winding down on 2019 going into 2020?
Well, the most important thing is the fact that we need to understand that that history is not ultimately controlled by humanity, that pride precedes the fall, and that ultimately virtue is never finally defeated. And with those words, we should go forth into 2020 with courage and hope.
Wow. And so our quote for today, Joseph, I have chosen G.K. Chesterton. This was written, this was in the London News, the Illustrated London News, January 14th, 1911. He said, "The true soldier fights not because he hates what is in front of him, but because he loves what is behind him." And that is why, my friends, we must engage in the battle of ideas that is raging out there today. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals and, like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry. But tell them if I don't survive, I was born free. I was born free. I was born free.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, The Source AM and FM, AM 560 and 100.7 FM, 560thesource.com.